What was the attraction of Gloucester at that stage?
Well, I mean, at that time, Gloucester were flying, absolutely flying. We were top of the league by miles that year, and everything good was coming out of Gloucester, and it's local to me. But moreover, I mean, it's so well supported. You knew that every game you come to, it would just be a full out house, and you know, you'd be well received. So it was quite an easy decision for me to come. But
presumably, you played at King's Home while
you
were at Bristol.
Played at King's Home. Yeah, that's right. I remember playing against Gloucester when Dean was coach here, and I think Gareth Archer had punched Trevor Woodman in the face, and his tooth had come out, and he had to go off, and things that went on back then, they just wouldn't happen now. You know, it's just a different ball game now, completely. But yeah, always coming here was a challenge, you know, always as a player. So I wanted to be part of that. Why not? And Dean was instrumental into me coming. For sure, I wanted to link up with him again because I learned so much and really valued his time. And then coming here was great, you know. And then history was what it was. I was here for a long time. So,
but it clearly went very well from the start because I think you were the player's player your first season.
Yeah,
here,
yeah. No, I was really well received, which is great. And I look back at those years and. Yeah, it was fantastic. Everything was going right for me. I was involved in the senior squad here, playing every week, and then involved in England squads, and things were looking really good. I had some unfortunate injuries just prior to selection. One of them was a neck injury just prior to Six Nations. I was told by Andy Robinson, the coach of England at the time, that I was going to be starting with Simon Shaw in the first round of the Six Nations games. We played Bath the week after that, and I got injured and it was ruled out of the Six Nations. So that was really, really disappointing. But managed to get on the tour in the summer, and then toured. It was Australia first, and then South Africa. Yeah. So I went to Australia that first year, and then the second year went to South Africa. But these were tours whereby I think it was a Lions tour going on, and so people were away, like Martin Johnson and Steve Borthwick at the time were the second rows. So it didn't feel like a full-fledged clap like I was going to get for the Six Nations, but. Anyway, but still.
Nevertheless, you got your first England cap.
I did. And
what do you remember of that match against Australia?
Not much actually. It went so quick and it was so intense. It was just, you know, international rugby is a big scene. There's 80,000 people watching you, and you're full of nerves anyway. And the emotion just takes over the day. And before long, it's half time. You're like, where did that go? And then the game's finished and you look at the scoreboard and you've lost by a lot, and it's like, bloody hell, that just happened so quick. I felt like the intensity was that you make a mistake and you're really, really punished for it, whereas in the Premiership you make a mistake and you can cover it up a little bit, but any mistake you made, you'd be in trouble.
Were you conscious of the crowd?
It just heightens the intensity of the day, just to sort of have that feeling of being watched so intently, and the noise, you know, it is intimidating, and that's what, you know, we have here at Gloucester, which we've got that and we use it really well.
You use the word intimidating. That's a strong word.
It is, and I remember playing for Bristol. It's intimidating for sure, and like. You just don't want to make the mistakes. You don't, and when you do make them, it's more pressure on the next bit, and it 100% is intimidating.
Who was your captain when you came to Gloucester?
Jake Boer was captain, an inspirational captain for me. I remember coming in and thinking, wow, this is the next level. This really is the next level. It wasn't just him; it was everyone else. that were on that journey of success, the standards at training, the accountability he put on players, the whole thing was just far more like what I was wanting it to be. So I was delighted to be involved in that at the time. That's what you, as a player, you just want that direction, especially if you're coming from another club. You want someone, okay, I've got that. And then eventually you'll become that person who demands those standards. So, yeah, it's the captaincy is such an important piece.
That year of 2006, with you getting your first cap against Australia, it was a good year all round, wasn't it? Because just before you went to Australia, Gloucester had won the European Challenge Cup.
That's right, yeah. No, we were.
I watched you at the Stoop.
Yeah, no, that's right, the Stoop. God, and James Forrester scoring the try. Yeah, he was a special player as well. We had a great squad back then, some real talent.
There was a lot of young talent too coming through the academies.
Yeah, there was, and that's what's actually Gloucester's been really strong for, and still is strong for now, is the youth and the academy setup we've got, and getting what we've got around here. There's so many wonderful local clubs, and tapping into that, using it, and actually getting guys who actually want to play for Gloucester and believe in the Gloucester way. So yeah, no, back then it was the same as it is now.
Tell us about the players who stick out in your memory from that time at Gloucester.
So some of the characters, I suppose, you look at your Chris Fortes, your Pasties, Mark Cornwall, just like proper Gloucester boys, Andy Hazels. You know, the sort of, they've been here and done that, and I remember coming into the environment, it was just, some of the banter was great, and it's just everyone was on board with each other, and it was a real tight group. You know, you had big characters like Junior Paramore and Olivier Zahm, and you know, there were some real notable key people playing for the team then. And then you had the younger players like myself and James Forrester and James Simpson Daniel.
Anthony Allen, of course, was involved in those days.
And Tins was then signed up, and he was a great addition for the club. And then later Ian Bolshaw came across, and you know, you saw some of my era getting involved. So no, it was good times, and you know, definitely had a really, really competitive squad. We just didn't quite get that end result that we all felt we deserved. We were very, very close in a few times and lost the finals. And
Leicester were a real problem, weren't they?
Yeah, Leicester were tough, and their game plan was very forward dominated, and they probably actually haven't evolved since then, and that's probably why they're struggling now. But they were the form team. I think it's 7 or 8 years on the bounce or something. Very, very impressive if you look back at it.
Bertolami came across from Italy. I mean, that was an unusual.
It was, yeah.
Signing, perhaps.
Yeah, it was. It was good, though. I mean, he was a good player, and you know, he went well within the squad as well. Was here for a good few years, so we bought quite a good partnership. We worked quite well together, both of us. Then Jim Hamilton.
For somebody coming so far from Gloucester, he pretty quickly became a real favourite with the Kings Own faithful.
He could see the value in all of this. You know, all that we have at Kings Own is just wonderful. And I think from coming from Italy, where rugby's not celebrated as much, he saw that this is somewhere where it is celebrated, is enjoyed, and he wanted to be part of that, and could understand the values that came with it.
I think before that you played under Adam Baldy, didn't you, as well as captain?
Baldy's, yeah, he was our captain for one season, I think.
Yeah.
He was another good, strong leader, spoke well in the group, and was respected by everyone. So, yeah, I'd actually played with Adam throughout all sort of age groups, same age. So it was Colts under 19s and all that, and under 21s, and then played with him here. So yeah.
And then you played under Mike Tindall as captain as well.
How
different was that?
Well, I mean, having a back as a captain is always a bit different. Just from a forwards perspective, I always felt great to have as an eight as your captain, just because it's so right in the mix and certainly the forwards and then linking into the backs as well. But having Tins as a captain, well, he's almost like a back row player the way he plays, so he could empathise with some of the forward play. But it was great because he'd give the forward pack and particularly me autonomy to make some decisions that we needed to make. You know, I would lead the forwards in the lineouts, and we'd have a good working relationship.
What was the social side of Gloucester rugby like at that time?
Well, it's not that dissimilar to what it is now. I think you've got to be a bit more careful with your social media accounts, but socially, it's always been very strong. Culture at the club that we go out and enjoy ourselves and we go out as a team and have good fun together, because you know rugby is played on a Saturday, but the rest of the time you have to get on with your colleagues, and we had some good fun times for sure, but it's one side of rugby that's never really going to go away. You have to have that social side to it. You have to be buy into the team spirit and the way that we do things, and one of those ways is you socialise with them outside of working hours. It's not just come up and train and do nothing else. You have to do all the other bits and enjoy it, and certainly the group now do that.
You spoke of your relationship with Tins as captain, and you were pack leader, effectively. I mean, how does the dynamic work on the field if things start to move in the wrong way? Who is the pivotal decision maker?
You always go back to your captain. The leader on the pitch is the leader, is the captain of the pitch, and we'd have various leaders throughout. It wasn't just me. It would be that we'd have a scrum leader at the time, and a line-out. Backs would generally be run by Tins, but your 10 controls things. You know that the your 10 has to control the game and the way it was played. And we had a few 10s at the time: Ryan Lamb, Duncan McRae, Carlos Spencer for a short time. So your 10s are really, really important, and that's why Tins was great, because he could understand from the forwards' perspective, but obviously playing 12 or 13 he was very close to 10 and wanted a steer on how and which way we play.
You had a number of 10s. Is that disruptive in a sense of continuity from one season to the next?
Yeah, for sure. Like having a consistent 10 is the mark of a successful team, for sure. Like you look at all the successful national teams, Johnny Wilkinson at 10, Dan Carter, they've all got pivotal key figures in those positions. Owen Farrell now. It's a really important position, and to chop and change is difficult. And I felt that was always a bit of a challenge for us. We never had a standout starter every week. It was always someone else, or there'll be someone else. And that carried on, you know, with Nicky Robinson and then Freddie Burns. It was never a nailed-on position, you know. And I think having that nailed-on position as your 10 is important.
It's interesting looking back that perhaps affected the performance.
Yeah, it could well have done. I mean, it wouldn't all be down to that, but you know, it's going to be a contributing factor for sure. One player could have one great game and then not such good a game, and someone else could have a good game, and then you didn't ever know which one was starting, which was a good way in many positions. You'd love that, to have the sort of strength in your squad where you could rotate, but for a 10 I believe that you have to be the standout, and this is your 10, you're going with them the whole season.